Recording has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. And welcome to the 26th GNSOE PDP team meeting taking place on the 15th of November, 2018 at 1400 UTC. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the telephone bridge, could you please let yourself be known now?
Hi, this is Aiden Fodley, and I'm only on the audio bridge today. Thank you, Aiden.
Hearing no one else, we have apologies from Garuth Aristov, GAC, James Bladel of RRSG, Farzaneh Body of NCSG, and Leon Sanchez, the ICANN board liaison. They have formally assigned Raul Goslin and Lindsay Hamilton-Reed as their alternates for this call in any remaining days of absence. During this period, the members will have read-only rights and no access to conference calls. Their alternates will have posting rights and access to conference calls until the member's return date. As a reminder, the alternate assignment form must be formalized by the way of the Google assignment form. The link is available in the agenda pod to the right and the meeting invite email. Statements of interest must be kept up to date. If anyone has any updates to share, please raise your hand or speak up now. Seeing or hearing no one, if you need assistance updating your statement of interest, please email the GNSO Secretariat. All documentation and information can be found on the ePDP Wiki space. There is an audio cast and view-only Adobe Connect for non-members to follow the call, so please remember to state your name before speaking. Recordings will be circulated on the mailing list and posted on the public Wiki space shortly after the end of the call. Thank you. I'll now turn it back over to our chair, Kurt Pritz. Please begin.
Thanks, Terry, and thanks everyone for being here for this extended version of the meeting. I think we'll go ahead and have this extended version and have an intermission about 90 minutes in. My initial comments to start off the meeting are one on the face-to-face meeting. We're zeroing in on a location. There's a meeting with the ICANN committee that's in charge of the budget this afternoon, and so I think that decision will be made then, and we'll push it out right away. So that's that. Secondly, we're working on a revised format for submitting comments to the initial report. So we want to try to compartmentalize the comments as they come in. So one, they're easier for people to read, but two, easier for us all to sort and analyze so that we can line comments up against one another. Well, I'm getting a demo of that system that I think involves Google Forms, which is a tool we haven't used before, Friday, and then we'll demo it for you guys right after that. So I hope this is a helpful way to collect and analyze comments for us. I see that as a really important tool for being able to manage administratively what happens once an initial report is established. There's a couple substantive work items I want to touch on. One is we asked for volunteers. I don't know how to so what I have in my notes is questions K, L, and M, but they really have to do with the responsibility of parties processing data, and they go back to the temporary specifications sections 5, 6, and 7, where contracted parties especially noted that those sections were written in an overly prescriptive style, and they could be reworded in sort of a simplified or straightforward manner that required compliance with GDPR. I think this would be a meaningful addition to the initial report. I don't think it's controversial, and I'd like we ask for volunteers, and I'm staring at the contracted parties when I say this. So if you guys could go back to your support teams and take a look at those sections, the questions really were L and M, and I forgot the number that goes in front of them. But if you could go back to your teams and see if there's a way to, you know, not overly tersely, but rewrite those sections in a way that makes it clear that registries and registrars have definite new responsibilities starting May 28th with the processing of data in a way that guides but does not restrict you. That would be really good. So please take that on. And, you know, there's also a charter question there, charter question K, about ICANN responsibility in processing data. So this might be for you, but look at that charter question. I don't think it's really taken up in the temporary spec, but it is a charter question. So, you know, you might also look at sections 5, 6, and 7 and of the temporary spec and see what ICANN would say about its responsibilities in processing data there. Marika, do you have a correction to what I said?
No, thanks, Kurt. I just wanted to flag that Caden actually sent some language to the list for those charter questions to start that conversation. So it's, you know, at the moment, very general language in response to those three questions. So if people maybe can look at that and see what they would like to see added or changed, that may be helpful. We just tried to provide a starting point, as no one indeed had come forward so far to volunteer to write up something for that. So as I said, you know, there is some language on the list, so, but of course, feel free to take the pen and modify as needed.
Yeah, thanks, Marika, and thank you for doing that, Caitlin. And again, for the registries or registrars, you know, you have your own industry associations where you want to be advising your members what they have to do. So this work you might do would serve that dual purpose. And then finally, I'll go ahead, Thomas.
Thanks very much, Kurt, and hi everyone. I saw the document on KLM, ICANN's responsibilities, registrar's responsibilities, and registry's responsibilities. And I think that part of the answer to those questions will be in the recommendation that we're going to discuss in a little bit on the controller/joint controller/processor discussion. I think that if we make the recommendation for contracted parties and ICANN to enter into a joint controller agreement, that agreement will specify the responsibilities. And in broader terms, the temporary specification did have a catalog of things that the data subjects should be informed about. And as we mentioned during our input in preparation for the triage report, those requirements were more or less copied and pasted from the GDPR. So I think that maybe the legally most solid way to responding to this would be to leave the schedule of responsibilities to the joint controller agreement, to leave the exact way data subjects need to be informed about the data that is processed, you know, the information duties stemming from, I think, Article 12 to 14 or so of the GDPR, will be left to implementation, because that's legal craftsmanship. I think we will only make mistakes if we try to do last-minute collaborative drafting of the notes that need to go out to the data subject when it comes to fulfilling information duties. So, you know, that would be my hopefully pragmatic suggestion for information to be put in our report on this.
Thanks for that, Thomas. That was really well put. And then, you know, I hope we're agreeing and that you're making part of my point for me that some of the catalog of duties in the temporary specification are too specific. And since we're writing a policy, we want those sorts of words that require registries and registrars to comply with GDPR and invoke those. There's a section about security steps that should be taken, and that language should be made with policy level language and not the specific language that you just mentioned, because there are mistakes likely to be made, and there's requirements in this temporary specification that are probably not met by all, even though the GDPR is complied with. So Thomas's intervention was good, but to me that would not let the contracted parties off hook and contributing some language here. So Mark? Or Thomas, did you want to reply to what I said?
Sorry, old hand.
Let's go to Mark. Yeah, let's go to Mark.
Thanks, Kurt. Mark Anderson. I just want to respond to something you said, and I think I'm splitting hairs over the way you said something, but I just want to clarify, we don't need consensus policy language to require contracted parties to comply with GDPR. The law requires us to comply with the law. That's what a law is. What we need is create policy that addresses areas where the contract that exists with contracted parties conflict with that law. So I think I'm splitting hairs, Kurt, and I think that's probably what you meant. But I just wanted to react a little bit to what I heard and remind everyone we don't need to put a policy language that says contracted parties, will comply with the GDPR. The law makes it so that we have to comply with the GDPR. We need to address areas where there's inconsistencies between our contract language and that law.
Thanks, Mark. I was channeling the comments of registries and registrars during the triage portion of our discussion where. We all noted, and I think we pretty much agreed that language in those sections of the temporary specification were overly prescriptive and required some rewrite. So I think what I'm asking is for registry and registrar input into how those sections would be rewritten. I'm not sure blank is the appropriate answer because for the reason that, well, the law is the law and we have to comply with it, I think some nod needs to be made in the policy document about the issues that those three sections in the temporary specification sought to address. So I would ask the contracted parties to look at those sections and say, in this policy document that we're creating that's replacing the temporary specification, what wording would be appropriate? And so, again, to reiterate, I don't think it's just a blank. Although Thomas's comments are sort of clicking in for me and making more sense on how to handle that. Diane?
Kurt, I think I'm about to say the same thing in that I agree with Mark and Thomas and you really piecing it all together that it certainly the policy shouldn't be telling what the law is or what the requirements are, and the specificity up front about what they should be doing is probably overstepping, but it could be that we're tying together, we're saying that we're making this policy recommendation, and because of that there's either a hole or a gap between what the contract presently supports and what it should. So we're somewhat then making a recommendation, let's say, that this is the possible, a recommendation of where we have to fill that gap with a proposed change. So I think that's the route we want to go, because ultimately we want this to be the policy to be implementable, and we want to be able to have it work. So I think we're all on the same page with that.
Yep. All right. Thanks. I'm sorry that discussion took so long. I was probably a little sloppy in how I introduced it. The last topic I want to raise in the initial comments is that we had a brief discussion, as brief as we can be, regarding legal versus natural persons distinction and OMERS recommendation that we focus on personal data in that discussion. So OMER has amended the initial report language, and I'd like you to there's been no comment to it, which is so it means it's accepted, right? So I'd like you to take a look at that. I wonder if staff, Marika or Caitlin, can you relook at that document and highlight for everybody Amr's contribution? I know we don't have to put it up here, but the document saves when it saves changes, it anonymizes the contributors. So if we could highlight in some color what Amr's changes are, I think that'd be instructive for us. Hadia, how are you sounding today? Go ahead, Hadia.
Okay, so this is a quick one. I don't know if you want Tom to start, but anyway, there was a suggestion, and I was actually going to reply to, and I'm going to send out the email in just like a couple of minutes, by Benedict to actually require the registrars to require the registrants to indicate whether they are natural or legal persons. And the suggestion made by Benedict actually only says, you know, that we require the registrars to make the registrants make a declaration. And it does not say that we require the registrars or the registries or anyone to process the data according to this declaration. And actually, this declaration is a right to the registrants because registrars should not refuse any extra data that is in line with the General Data Protection Regulation that could help the registrants in exercising their rights. And collection of this data is one of the rights that the registrants are entitled to. We are not saying that the registrars are going to process the data accordingly. We are just saying, you know, just let the registrants make the declaration. Just collect the data whether that says whether they are legal or natural. That's it, full stop. So there is no liability here. There are no risks associated with it. There are no risks of data breach associated also with the proposal. It's only an extra piece of data that is now required because the GDPR does make this distinction, and we are trying to bring the temps back in compliance with the GDPR. And I've seen, you know, some comments saying that this is this falls under a new PDP. No, this is just an extra piece of data that would be required. It's just collecting the data that says if they are natural or legal persons. And another thing, when registrants during the collection of the data, the information that we are going to give the data subject is what will govern how the data will be processed. And the registrars will need to, at the time of the collection of the data, will need to provide lots of details to the registrants, probably in some form of a privacy notice or something. Those details will include controller details of the processing, purposes, legitimate interests, rights to request modifications or rectification to their data. So what's the problem to add to all these, you know, details that the registrars are going to give to the registrants anyway, a clause that says or explains what is a natural and person and what is a legal person, that could actually aid them in making this declaration or in this declaration. So let's put it now as like, let's collect the data that indicates whether they're natural or legal. It's the registrant's right. Let's not act upon it. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Hadi. I don't want to address your long comment with something too brief. So I don't want to be, because I don't want to be disrespectful. I think kind of where we are is to go back to the DPAs or the Data Protection Board and verify whether such an act would completely be without liability to registries and registrars, and that's what we want to ascertain. So this is not a deep topic on the agenda. I just want to collect input on Amr's very specific intervention, and we can do that over email, but I'll give Mark the right to respond.
Thanks, Kurt. Mark Anderson for the transcript. I'll just respond very briefly to Hadia on this one and just say that the CPH position is that this is not necessary for GDPR compliance. The focus of phase one, and especially considering where we are from a timing perspective, the focus on phase one must necessarily be on that which is necessary for GDPR compliance. This is not necessary for GDPR compliance, and therefore necessarily must not be a conversation to be had at this time. Speaking on behalf of the CPH here, let's please, being cognizant of where we are from a timeline perspective, take conversations that are not necessary for GDPR compliance and save them for later.
Oh, gosh, you guys. So, Alan and Margie, if you could take 20 seconds each.
I don't know if I can take 20 seconds, but it won't be very long. What Mark has just said, number one, is nothing that has been said until now. We have had declarations saying it will be impossible and the contracted parties will never agree to making the differentiation. Mark is now saying defer it past May 2019. That's a different statement completely than anything we have heard to date. That's number one. Number two, doing that takes all the pressure off, and at that point they're going to be in a position to basically just stonewall and not do anything. So the question is, how do we resolve this issue equitably, understanding the deadline we have, but not essentially just giving it away because we're deferring it? Thank you.
Margie?
This is Margie. I agree 100% with what Alan said, and honestly, this is a surprise that all of a sudden this is how we're interpreting what we need to do during this EPDP. The reason why it's important to include it now is to get public comment on it. I mean, if we wait till later, we will not get public comment on it. The contracted parties don't have to agree. There's a lot in this report that we don't agree with. And the whole point of the report is not to identify consensus, but to get public comment positions so that we can craft our, discussions after the public comment period. So I feel that it's very important to include Benedict's recommendations in the report, noting that people don't agree with it, which is fine. That's where the rest of the report is as well. Thank you.
Mark?
Thanks. I guess I have to, first respond and say, I believe Ms. Alan and Margie are mischaracterizing what I said, and that's disappointing. But I don't want to pick a fight over this. I'm trying to think of how we can move this forward. There's a phase one conversation and there's a phase two conversation, and Alan and Margie seem to think that we have to have it in phase one, and that if it's not in phase one, there won't be an opportunity to have it later. And You know, I don't think I agree with that. I think there's an opportunity for us to talk about it later. And I'm not saying have the conversation after May 25th either. Once we develop a report, we can roll right into the second phase of deliberations. And I think that's exactly what the charter says. In fact, it does not say anything about waiting until May 25th. I guess I'm a little concerned by Margie's characterization that this initial report does not have to have consensus. Because if we're producing a report, an initial report that's not based on consensus, then, we have an awful lot of work ahead of us in this phase one because, just to remind everybody, our job here is to produce consensus policy. And so if we're not producing consensus policy, we're not producing anything. I realize there are areas where we have disagreement, but our job is to come to consensus on items that will be policy that's binding on contracting parties. So I guess fundamentally, if we're not moving towards consensus, we don't feel like we are producing an initial report that shows consensus, then I think we have to have a hard conversation with ourselves about where we are and where we're going with this working group.
Thanks, Mark. Just to close this off, I want to say that in our comments that are in the draft initial report so far, we're talking about doing things like going to the European Data Protection Board. We're going out for public comment to see what other comments we are going to solicit. And to me, that sounds a lot like what we originally postulated or originally coalesced around in doing research on this topic, which was going to start not at the end of our final report, but the research was going to start right away. I think that, a lot of the comment on this issue is not backed up by data. Even detailed comments about how difficult such implementations aren't really quantified, although the issues are clearly raised. I'll try to write this more eloquently than I'm saying it now, but right at the start of this conversation, we had a pretty good position about and this is a hard problem that we need to figure out. And while either side is saying, is arriving at conclusions, we haven't done the fact-based, the data-driven analysis that's supposed to feed into our policy discussions on this topic because it is so difficult. So I'll try to write that position up and get back to that. So let's get into the agenda itself, and we'll start with Thomas Rickert, and he did a very nice job in presenting materials he and Diane developed and were reviewed and reviewed favorably by the rest of us in a meeting with ICANN. I was only there for half of it and kind of left Thomas flat there a little bit, but did a very nice job. And as a result of the meeting, we have some concerns about where ICANN will come out on the issue of joint controllers and given the timing of things, what we should put in the initial report. And there's been some conversations with since then, and Thomas wants to present some of his and other people's thinking, that's the thinking of other people that have been who have been contributing to this discussion.
Thanks very much, Kurt. This is Thomas Rickert again for the ISTCP.
Thomas, can I interrupt you for just a minute? Alan has his hand up, and I want to see whether it's to a point of order or to some other issues. So I hope, I know you just got your juices flowing and you're going, but Alan, go ahead.
I was just going to point out that we've had a discussion on Amir's comments, but we didn't have a discussion on this the message that Benedict sent out. And I think if we're going to I'll discuss the issues, we need to discuss all of the ones presented, not just some. I don't know whether that's a point of order or not. It doesn't have to be done right now, but I think it should be done. Thank you.
I think that's – and it is a point of order, I think. And I think Amir's comment is separable from the bigger issue. It's more of a language issue, but we're certainly not done discussing the legal versus natural issue. So, Thomas, if you can restart with the same enthusiasm, that'd be great.
I will surely do my best. Thanks very much, Kurt. And hi, everyone. It's Thomas Rickert for the record. What you see in front of you in the Adobe room is a Google Doc, which now combines the language that you already saw that was circulated on the list with a few amendments that I made based on the discussions that we had over the last couple of days. So, first of all, I think what we need to do is confirm the outcome of the meeting that we had 2 days back. And I just want to make absolutely sure that this entire team is aligned, and if it isn't, that we take good note of any dissenting opinions or objections there might be. So I guess the first question that we asked last time we met was whether our group thinks that it has the authority to speak to the legal determination of what concept is applicable. And in our case, I guess there was an emerging consensus that a joint controller scenario is applicable. So again, I think those who think that we can't speak to that legal question should put their concerns on the record. And shouldn't there be any? And I think during the last call, the overwhelming response from this team was that it is well within the scope of our work and within our powers to make a legal determination that we can put into our interim report. So, should you have any doubts or issues with that, I think you should probably put that into the chat so that staff can take good note of that. But absent any objections on that point, the second question is, what language we put into our report to adequately reflect our state of our current state of deliberations. And as you know, we had quite some discussion about ICANN's input. The vast majority of those who spoke up during the last meeting said, no, we're not going to wait for ICANN's input, but we're going to move forward and try to publish our report as planned. Nonetheless, we're open to the suggestions that ICANN might have, and we will carefully analyze the input that ICANN will offer probably today, and then either discuss this before the publication or while our report is out for public comment. And I try to reflect that situation in a slightly amended introductory paragraph to be included in our report. So what you see here, and I know that this is a last-minute intervention or last-minute submission, but it's only a few lines that are new, which I'm going to read out to you so that everyone's on the same page. But what I would like to do before I read that for you is go to Mark, who has his hand raised. Mark, please.
Thanks, Thomas. Mark Anderson for the transcript. Sorry, I was just trying to multitask and read through the language you're proposing here. So I think my main question is around what the final form of the language you're recommending get added to the initial report. I think I want to commend you. You've done a lot of good work and laid out some good background and good information on this. What was not immediately clear to me, and I see now that you're producing a recommended or suggested preliminary recommendation here. So I guess I have to go back and relook at that. But I guess it wasn't clear exactly how you were proposing moving your recommendation to policy language, and I think that's important and impactful. So I guess I want to go back and take a hard look at that, and we'll gladly provide comments. But I also want to note, this is something we talked about, going way back during the triage report. We talked about Appendix C and the language in there, and when we were talking about Appendix C, we talked about the fact that contracted parties, registries, registrars, ICANN, needed to have proper GDPR compliant agreements in place, whether that be Article 26 compliant or using processor controller language. Ultimately, I think we all agreed that the contracted parties, ICANN, registries, registrars, need to have GDPR compliant contracts in place. And so along that principle, I think there's agreement, but I guess I'd like to look at the exact language, and we'll happily provide comments and feedback to that. Thank you.
Hey, Thomas, are you there?
Sorry, I was entertaining a muted microphone, so I apologize for that. So, Mark, I'm not sure what your expectations are with respect to policy language, but in a nutshell, what this text suggests, and I think that's the policy part, the other part is the rationale. The policy part would be to recommend that ICANN registries and registrars negotiate and enter into a joint controller agreement. Then comes the rationale explaining why our group currently thinks that it is a joint controller situation. And then follows a table with the ICANN purposes, or the purposes for processing which are to be governed by ICANN, including a broad brush allocation of responsibilities, which should then be reflected in a joint controller agreement. And the rest of that, the exact terms of a joint controller agreement and the exact implementation or operationalization of who's going to do what, will be left to implementation, i.e. the negotiation between the contracted parties and ICANN. So that's the rough thinking. Let me pause to go to Margie, and then I suggest that we don't take more comments at this stage, but just go through the language in order to get that name down. Margie, please.
Sure, Thomas. This is Margie. I had a chance to listen to the recording with on the legal issue yesterday, and it struck me that I think what JJ was saying, maybe I'm wrong, and Thomas, please clarify, is that he's not, at least from their perspective, they're not comfortable with the joint controller relationship, referencing it as a joint controller at this point, or am I misunderstanding what was the core of the concern? And the reason I say that is, assuming that my assumption is correct, I think I would not want to have this language say enter into a joint controller agreement until we've gotten that analysis and made the discussion. In other words, I'd like to leave it vague for now. I agree with the concept of an agreement that identifies all the, roles and responsibilities and all that. I don't have a problem with just that part of the recommendation. And I'm not saying I disagree either about the joint controller aspect. I just like to have the ability to to at least share the information and have us think it through, and maybe, you know, maybe that'll change our collective assessment of the relationship once we take a look at that. So that's my suggestion, is to perhaps not push it as a joint controller at this point. I'm not saying that we wouldn't get there later.
Thanks very much, Margie. A couple of points in response. I think that JJ's feedback has not been substantive enough to be characterized as a refusal to enter into a joint controller agreement. He rather mentioned that ICANN does have concerns based on the fact that before you have discussed the individual processing activities and who shall be responsible for what, you can't really say whether ICANN will be happy with the allocation of responsibilities. So I guess that was the main argument, if I characterized this correctly, and I invite others who've been present to chime in if I misrepresent what was being said. But I guess that where we are now as a group is that this EPDP team, or at least a number of participants, have said the day before yesterday that regardless of what ICANN's concerns might be, if we as a group are convinced, and I think that we are increasingly convinced that a joint controller situation is present, then we should come up with a recommendation along these lines and then analyze ICANN's input subsequently and take that into the equation. But I would also like to point out that I guess that some of the confusion, at least on my part, to hear that ICANN has an issue with accepting a joint controller situation is this. The worksheet that we've been working on, which now have been translated into our draft initial report, did contain the joint controller scenario. So it's not new. It's in the worksheets. It's been discussed on multiple occasions during our EPDP calls. It's been in the Hamilton memo. It's been in an Article 29 letter. And also, I didn't really dig for this, but I've been present when the ICANN board met with the CSG in Barcelona, and let me just read from the transcript what Becky Burr said. I want to first start out by saying that ICANN has acknowledged a role as a joint controller, that ICANN, in fact, entered into a joint controller agreement as part of the temp spec. So, you know, I can paste the link to that transcript into the chat in a moment. But I thought that this was a clear confirmation on the side of ICANN that the joint controller scenario would be accepted, applicable, and operationalized. And, you know, I think I should leave it there. And my suggestion, or at least I do hope that we can get agreement in this group as far as the initial report is concerned, that we try to reach consensus at this stage, or at least rough consensus, that a joint controller situation is present, that we agree on the allocation of responsibilities in the table that we're going to discuss in a couple of minutes, and then analyze ICANN's input as we will other community input during the public comment period. That's sort of the marching order that I took away from previous discussions inside the EPDP team. So, Mark, last intervention before we move to the text of the initial report, please.
Thanks, Thomas. Mark Anderson, and you know, I want to say I agree with what Margie said. You know, I don't, you know, I was on the call, and you know, I don't think I would characterize John's response as saying, you know, as being, you know, for or against a joint controller agreement. You know, agreeing with Margie said, you know, his response was more that, you know, the full analysis hadn't necessarily been done. And that certainly for some things, a joint controller arrangement seems to be the case, but that's not necessarily true for all the processing activities that exist. And so I guess, you know, what Margie suggests is that, you know, what's the necessary piece here is that contracted parties enter into negotiations. the exact form and the exact paper, if you will, that those negotiations occur on, should be left as much as possible to the contracted parties. You know, we've talked about how under GDPR this is a fact-based analysis. And so I think the ICANN lawyers and the registry lawyers can do that fact-based analysis and enter into proper GDPR compliant arrangements. And so really I think the key recommendation in my mind is for those negotiations to occur. And I want to caution us against being too prescriptive in exactly the form and substance of those negotiations. Different contracted parties have different business models, have different obligations under their contracts, have different jurisdictions that may or may not be applicable to them. And so to the extent possible, I think it's important to give the contracted party lawyers the flexibility to make their own determination on what the proper arrangement is legally.
So I guess, Mark, first of all, I'm not trying to convince the rest of the team or the wider community how exactly this should be done. My interest is in being pragmatic and getting something into the report that will help us get clarity on what a solution will look like, and also to advance our path towards compliance in the entire GTAD system. Having said that, I think that we need to discuss this at two levels. One is the principal question of whether a joint controller scenario is applicable or not. I guess, at least I cannot think of another solution that would be as sound and holistically waterproof as a joint controller situation. So if it looks like a joint controller situation from the outside, if this is meant to be a joint controller situation, then I think our group is not stepping over if it actually suggests that it is a joint controller situation and that the joint controller agreement shall be negotiated and entered into. So I think that's well within the scope of our work. And I do hope, and maybe Steph can take note of this first point, I guess that's what we need to get clarity on from this group or hear objections. As regards to the second point, I guess there is no appetite, at least on my side, to come and draft a joint controller agreement and take away that part of the work from the contracted parties, their lawyers, and ICANN. And there are an awful lot of legal and operational details that will need to be specified in a joint controller agreement, and there we shouldn't go near that. However, what we should probably be doing, and this is what I've reflected in the updated language here, is come up with a broad brush allocation of responsibility. To illustrate this, if we look at data escrow and Ibero, those are tasks that are being carried out because ICANN prescribes it. Those go beyond the ordinary data security measures and contingency planning that a contracted party might otherwise do. And therefore, I think it's for us to propose and for the community to comment on whether they think we got it right. And then, that allocation of responsibilities, purpose, data security, Ibero, escrow agents, would be our policy recommendation. How that is filled with life, again, will be left to contractual arrangements. Or purpose M, I think it is, Christina's purpose, if a registry wants data to be collected and processed to check eligibility criteria, that's something that the registry that has those special eligibility criteria should be responsible for. And therefore, I think that's something that we should put into our report. And I think if we keep it at that level, and say you need to do a JCA. It needs to be two-parted. One is a private part, the other is the public part. You sort out all the details, but we want you to take care of some basic parameters and allocations of responsibilities. I think that's fair and well within the scope of what we're doing. So, Margie, over to you. And then I'm really going to be forceful. I'm not taking more comments, but actually going through the language of the draft report. Margie, please.
Sure. I think Mark actually echoed a lot of the concerns that I had, that in some situations it may be joint, in others it may not be, and you said the same thing. For example, the extra fields that a registry might ask for. So anyways, I don't need to go into details, but Mark actually captured my point. And what I was really trying to get at is I'm not saying we would be vague at the very end of our process. At the time we get to our final report, I think we would be, you know, clear on this. I was merely suggesting that at this stage, let's, you know, leave it a little more vague, have the discussion in the report for sure, get the input from ICANN staff, and then we make the determination later to be more specific. So I agree with what Mark had said.
So I think I'm clear then on the exact proposal. So you want to leave out the entire legal rationale for why we think it's a joint controller situation and be silent on that.
No, I'm sorry. I'm
so
not
that question
that.
Goes.
No. I'm merely saying the first, I'm focusing on the recommendation itself. We can put our analysis in there. I don't have an issue with that. I'm merely saying that where it says recommends and enters into a joint controller agreement with the contracted parties, perhaps we say something like, you know, enters into, you know, an agreement with the parties that, you know, that relates to the roles and responsibilities as defined below, and just not call it a joint control agreement at this point. In our final report, we may actually do that, but, you know, and continue with the analysis. So it's not a big change.
Thanks, Margie. I think actually it's a quite substantial change because it would put the entire concept upside down. If you have other written agreements than a joint controller agreement, the only solution that would be left would be a convolution of data processing agreements that might be different for different processing activities. And I think that if we leave that open, the community will likely not be understand what the accountability concept that we're suggesting behind our compliance work is. So I think that's a vital factor. And then potentially the recommendations that we come up with would be inaccurately describing what we're doing, because if ICANN were, let's say, the sole controller for all this, as some have said earlier, then ICANN would be the governing body prescribing exactly what is done and how. And for that to be present, we don't have the level of granularity of how prescriptive ICANN is. And also, I think the contracted parties would likely not be happy with the characterization that they're only fulfilling ICANN's orders. And then it would be merely a matter of compliance, and I think then we could stop our policy work on this. I guess that the flexibility that we exercise with our policy work is only reflected in a joint controller situation adequately. But, you know, again, this is not for me. Let others chime in. We can always tweak the language of the report, but I think it is fair to the reader of the initial report to specify which route we think it will be, because there will be financial implications, there will be operational implications, and I guess the community should be able to comment on a quite specific proposal that we're making. Amar?
Yeah, thanks, Thomas. This is Amar. I note that you extended the queue, even though you said you wouldn't, so thank you for that. I just wanted to agree with you in the sense that We did a lot of work as a team to, get the worksheets on the purposes, and that is really the one area I believe that we made a great deal of progress in terms of achieving consensus as an EPDP team. And all the work that we did do is leading us towards a joint controller agreement, at least in specific areas. As Mark mentioned and Margie later followed up, there are some areas where that may not be the case, but in most of them, that is where our work has led us. So I think it wouldn't be fair to us as a team to not properly represent the results of this work in our initial report, but also, noting that there has been concern expressed from ICANN org, and we're going to take this into consideration when it becomes available. It wouldn't be too difficult to throw that in there, especially let the readers of the initial report know that this is going to come in. I think we do need to follow up on the work that we have done, and it's specific, especially because that's the part of the work that we actually do agree on. Thank you.
Thanks very much. And I think I'm the weakest chair, or I win the weakest chair of the day trophy, because I'm not accountable for my own queue management. But now we are where we are. Let's go to Diane, to Christina, and then I'm going to be strict and end the line and go to the text of the recommendation.
Hi, Thomas. I want to be able to take Amr's point further. I agree with it completely. But I wanted to also, repeat the fact of what Giorgio said, that this is a factual analysis. So from a legal perspective, the determination on joint controllership is actual analysis. We've done all the work to support that. And where I think the disconnect is between JJ and what JJ has expressed and what Margie has expressed is that just because we're making the factual determination that there is a joint controller relationship doesn't mean that for every single purpose and in every single scenario as identified in our workbooks that there is a joint relationship on every single data element and how all the processing activities happen. And that there is also a joint and several liability on all of those roles and responsibilities. As we've set out the roles and responsibilities in relation to the purposes in our workbooks will be 100% reflected and part of the joint controllership agreement. So a joint controllership agreement doesn't mean total joint and several liability and that there's joint controllership of every single purpose. It basically means that as a factual analysis, there is a joint controllership relationship, and then it breaks down, just as we've done, those different roles and responsibilities in relation to the data and proportionately assigns the liability according to those different processing activities. So that I think that what the missing piece in the memo that you've written is the fact to explain that, because the language that you've written out puts forth the language from a very academic standpoint that is confusing then to the practical application of what happens in a joint controller agreement. So if a paragraph is just added to say that the joint controllership relationship will reflect the work that we've done in the workbooks and will proportionately assign the roles and responsibilities separately according to the different processing activities we've outlined, and will thereafter proportionately assign liability, and this can we are making this recommendation that which will then be followed with a legal implementation by the different parties involved, and then leave it at that. And also note, like Amr said, that ICANN org is still reviewing this analysis, but this is our recommendation in line with the factual work that we've done.
Thanks, Diane. Christina?
Hi, Christina Rosette for the registries for the transcript. I just wanted to flag that I had put in the chat a potential revision to the end of the first sentence of the recommendation. And I think it addresses the concerns that Margie and Mark have raised while simultaneously making what I think is an extraordinarily important recommendation. And that revision would basically change the recommendation to the EPDP team recommends that ICANN negotiate and enter into an appropriate data processing agreement, which may be a joint controller agreement with the contracted parties. And if folks feel like that is language that addresses their concerns all the way around, then I think we could, you know, tweak the second part of the recommendation accordingly. Thanks.
Thanks, Christina, and thanks for what I think is a very constructive discussion around the issue. I think we're all working hard and racking our brains to find a way forward that gives us sufficient flexibility, but yet is firm enough to give the community some direction on where we are going. I would suggest that we go back to the exact language or alternatives that have been suggested now a little bit later, and now go through the text that many of you will actually not have been able to read because it's just been submitted a little bit before the call. So I would suggest that I read the language for you. Just need to find the document in a slightly bigger font size because my eyes are not that good anymore. Based on the information and the deliberation the EPDP team had on this topic and pending further input and legal advice, the EPDP team recommends that ICANN negotiates and enters into a joint controller agreement with the contracted parties. You will see that, you know, other than in the email that I sent a couple of days back, I've now incorporated further input that we might receive to give us the flexibility that we might need in order to alter the recommendation. Next paragraph. In addition to the legally required components of such agreement, the joint controller agreement shall specify the responsibilities of the respective parties for the processing activities as described below, indemnification clauses that shall ensure that the risk for certain processing activities is borne by either one or multiple parties that have the primary interest in the processing. So that's the introductory part. Then comes the rationale and the background. That's exactly what you saw from the memo that has been shared by Marika. That's the memo that I originally shared with the edits that Diane did. And then comes a lot of scrolling down. I'm not sure whether I scroll for everyone or whether all of you have scrolling power, but if you see what I see, then you should see the table, including the purposes. If you don't have, if I can't scroll for you, please scroll down to page number 7. And go to the purposes section. And what I did there is define the term ICANN purpose. In terms of drafting, that can certainly be done otherwise, but what we didn't like or concluded not to like a couple of calls ago was the term ICANN purpose, because it suggests that these purposes are only pursued by ICANN, which is why I included a definition. The term ICANN purpose is used to describe purposes for processing personal data that should be governed by ICANN.org via a consensus policy. Note there are additional purposes for processing personal data which the contracted parties might pursue, such as billing customers. But these are outside of what ICANN and its community should develop policies on or contractually enforce. It does not necessarily mean that such purpose is solely pursued by ICANN.org, because some of these purposes are actually pursued by the ICANN and one or two more parties, right? So that's one. And then what I did subsequently, and maybe we can run through that together briefly, where we had the description of who the responsible party is, registries, registrars, and ICANN. In the older version, there was a description of who's a joint controller, a controller, or a processor. Now it just mentions the responsible party. And that means that for certain processing activities, we have ICANN registrars and registries being responsible. That doesn't necessarily mean that all the three have to do it, do the processing, because for purpose A, the collection is done by the registrar, right? So the responsible party is not the party actually doing it, but the responsible party is the party that actually takes responsibility for the legality of the processing activity. And I've tried to adjust this language for all the purposes, and then this would need to be mirrored, and that's outside of what we're doing. This would need to be mirrored by indemnification clauses. So where, let's say, the registry is the responsible party for processing data for validation purposes, it might not be the party actually doing that because the registrars are passing on that data to the registry. But yet, the responsibility lies with the registry, and you know how it's going to be indemnified is an operational matter that should be discussed between the registries and registrars. So I hope that this approach, I hope that this methodology makes sense to you guys, and I'm trying to get out of the full screen view and check whether there's any instant feedback to this, and then I suggest we should go through the allocation of responsibilities purpose by purpose. Diane, I'm not sure whether that's an old hand or a new hand. Diane? Ah, she's lowered her hand, so let's go to Benedict now.
Hello. Two questions. First one, are indemnification clauses normal in JCAs? I ask that as somebody who genuinely doesn't know. And second question, just before Trang's question, she says the language on the page says a singular JCA. Is the intent that there would be one single agreement with all contracted parties? Thanks.
Thanks, Benedict. Benedict, there are no boilerplate joint controller agreements that have to be used. The GDPR just spells out some basic requirements for joint controller agreements as vitally required ingredients. So we've done joint controller agreements with indemnification clauses. We've done some without indemnification clauses. So if you have group companies that are joint controllers for certain processing activities, those might not need an indemnification clause amongst or between group companies. But where you have basically parties jointly controlling data at arm's length on commercial parameters, those would typically have indemnification clauses in there, because if you are a joint controller with somebody and some of the processing activities are solidly being carried out in the interest of your partner, then you want your partner to be responsible for the legality of that processing. Hadia, please.
Second question, sorry.
Refresh my memory, please, Benedict. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Hardy, I didn't mean to jump in ahead of you. Just repeating Trang's question before it disappears at the top of the chat, which is you've written JCA in the singular, and so Trang's question is, do you envision one single JCA between ICANN registries and registrars?
So thanks, Benedict, for reminding me of that question, and thanks, Trang, for asking it in the first place. I guess that's a question for us to decide as a team. If I were propose an approach, I would recommend that certain basic parameters need to be in all the joint control agreements, and ideally there would be a template to be used, but certainly there is the possibility to reflect special situations for special scenarios. So for registries that don't have special eligibility requirements, they might not need clauses on validation, right? So I think the starting point should be an industry-wide JCA, but there should be the flexibility by way of a bilateral or trilateral, if that's the word, negotiation to have additional stipulations regulated. But that's just my personal opinion. Hadia, please.
I have a very minor comment with regard to the ICANN purposes and defining it. I think it's very important to define it. However, I think putting an example like billing is one, because we all know that registries and registrars have their own billing systems and that have its own requirements. But just a trivial comment. And then following up on Benedict's comments, so what basically you are saying that you're recommending one single GCA for the industry, and then what? And then because for sure, like one single GCA won't work.
Okay, so you mentioned two points. I may not have made this sufficiently clear in the definition of ICANN purposes, but the billing example was an example that would fall outside the ICANN purposes, because as you rightfully said, billing is something that registrars do for their own business purposes. Some registrars, such as Benedict's Registrar of Last Resort, they don't bill registrars, right? So it shouldn't be for ICANN to require data processing for billing purposes, because that's a processing activity that's outside ICANN's governing powers, if you wish. The second point on the joint controller agreements, one size fits all for everyone, and then what? I guess that we should go as far as we feel comfortable in specifying the details of what should be in the joint controller agreement. And yes, I think it would be both pragmatic as well as appropriate for ICANN to come up with, in collaboration with the registry and registrar stakeholder groups, who would probably be in a good position to do this on behalf of the contracted parties, to come up with a template. But this template should contain basic parameters on who's responsible for what and how to indemnify, but then there might be specialities of contracted parties that would need to be reflected at the operational level, that would require a side letter or addenda or amendments to the standard template. But maybe we can hear from those who are in ICANN's contractual department or from contract lawyers with the contracted parties on how this is best being done, and then we can add a note, an implementation guideline for this specific point. Emily?
Thanks a lot, Thomas, and thanks for taking us through this document and your reasoning, which is always very clear and crisp. I've not been able to make the last few calls, so I might well be behind on a lot of the discussion, but I was a little surprised to read the analysis from ICANN on the joint controller issue. I mean, to me, it seems straightforward, certainly with regard to the publication of who is data, which is the most legally contentious and risky area. From the perspective of registrars, I can't see that that registrars would take the step of publishing who is data were they not required to do so by the terms of their ICANN accreditation. And so to me, really to support your point that a joint controller or at least some sort of agreement where the roles and responsibilities are properly hammered out through negotiations, then seems a constructive way forward. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Emily, Alan?
Thank you, Thomas. Alan, let's go back quick. I just want to say that just going back to the original suggestion of your language about a potential recommendation on that, I just wanted to be clear that that is something that I think we, you know, as a stakeholder group, especially the registries, we need to have a bit more conversation about, because I personally would find myself much more aligned with your pragmatic approach on this. Therefore, I just want to put on the record that I would like to take it back to the stakeholder group and say that, you know, the prompt is your original language seems more in line. So regardless of if compromise is closed or not, I think we need to take a slight second, because let's be honest, we know that this process moves ridiculously fast, and we just want to make sure that we take everything into account to make sure that we're fully representing those who we're supposed to be. So thank you.
Thanks very much, Alan. And yep, here comes the next Alan. Alan G, please.
Thank you very much. We're now back much closer to what I thought the original intent was of these things in the language you now have as the ICANN purpose. I think you have a red herring in there talking about billing information. We've already been told multiple times that although on some occasions the who is information may coincide with billing information, that's not the information registrars use. Yes, they collect billing information, but it's completely unrelated to our discussion and PDP on who is. So my question is, if we use this definition and we remove the red herring of billing information, which I don't think is generally accepted to be who is information, what's left? Pretty much everything we're talking to is governed by ICANN consensus policy, with the exception of the data elements that registries may require for validation, which is in a small number of cases, and the information that goes into the zone file, where one could readily construe, I think, that registries have a need for that, and they can't do their business without it. So aren't we end up saying that the bulk of the WHOIS data we're talking about is there solely for who ICANN's purposes? And does that imply, and I thought I knew when I started, but now I'm not sure, does that imply that for those elements, other than the registry-specific ones and the zone file, that ICANN is, in fact, the sole controller of those, if it's purely for our purposes?
Thanks very much, Alan, for the question, and I'm sorry to hear that we managed to confuse you over time. And in fact, it's not an easy thought process to go through, and let me try to help shed some light on this. First of all, the example of billing, I'm more than glad to take out. Let me tell you why I put it in there. Reason for that is that we had a purpose in the original or in the currently binding temporary specification that data will be processed for the purpose of billing. And I wanted to illustrate that, and maybe I should have made this clearer, that this purpose was removed because it's not within ICANN's purview. And you are certainly correct that, you know, we have two layers of complexity here. Number one, it's not within ICANN's purview to govern, and number two, the data is not used for billing purposes in the first place, but it's the account holder data. So my suggestion is, let's try to remove that issue by just removing the example that I probably shouldn't have included in the definition in the first place. So let's remove that, and then on the question of whether ICANN is a sole controller or not, I think when we go through the responsibilities of the parties for the various purposes, you will find that and for some purposes, you only have ICANN as the responsible party. You know, that that would be eBureau and escrow. I think some of the contracted parties even think that, or not only think, but they are of the view that that escrow and Ibiro is also in their interest, and therefore it's the purpose that they pursue. But even more so, the starting point is not that much of who has an interest in what or who has access to what data. But the question is, when we do the determination of controller processor arrangements or joint controller arrangements, is the law. And the law has introduced Article 26 for complex scenarios in which the data subject should not seek for the right party to exercise their rights, nor should a data protection authority be forced to find the right party to go after in such convoluted processing worlds. And therefore, it's not a matter of who's interested in what, and then let's allocate the responsibilities, and then let's use a governing concept of our choice. But it's a matter of what does it look like from the outside? How would the processing activities be shaped if one or the other party wouldn't be present? And if the processing would look different in the absence of one of the parties, that would suggest, at least according to legal literature, that as soon as the party, as the processing would change, if one party would be missing, that then this party has exceeded the threshold of relevance to be called a joint controller. I mean, certainly the legal determination is quite complex, and I think with this 5 or 6 page rationale, we've only scratched the surface. But I think if our group comes to the conclusion that the joint controller situation is the situation to go for, then we should say so. And I think firmly that a data processing agreement where ICANN is the sole controller and all the others are just processing data on ICANN's behalf would not be appropriate. Typically, controller processor scenarios are those scenarios where one party doesn't want to do certain processing on its own and outsources that to another party. ICANN can't do that. ICANN can't perform the role of a registry or a registrar itself. We have this three-tier GTAD world with the respective roles because the community, all the parties involved, developed it that way. And I think it's not for this EPDP, at least, to throw that overboard. So let's see whether we have more comments on this. Alan, is that an old hand or a new hand?
No, just one small clarification. I understand the concept of how it looks from the outside, and although ICANN is making the rules, the registrar is the sole visible party in most cases. I'm not sure why that implies the registry is a joint controller, because they're basically invisible from the outside. Thank you. I'm not sure you need to answer it now. I just wanted to make it clear. It's still not crystal clear in my mind. Thank you.
That's fine, Alan. And it's not easy. And if you look at the Article 29 group working paper on joint controllers, when I read it, I was none the wiser afterwards because even the examples that were given didn't really enlighten me, but that might just be me and my limited capabilities of comprehending complex legal matters. But I think if you look at the scenario, at the setup in its entirety, if you look at how registries require registrars to collect certain data on their behalf, if you look at how registrars deal with the consumers or with the registered name holders and do certain things, if you look at how ICANN influences the way data is processed, opposite to, let's say, the CCTRD world, where you have entirely different governing concepts, if you look at how our community comes up with consensus policies, including the strong voice of the registries and the registrars, if you look at the way the RAs and the RRAs are being negotiated between the contracted parties and how data processing is operationalized, I think there isn't really a way to plausibly explain to the outside world that this is a sole controller and processor arrangement. Maybe it can be done, but I think that absent a written, robust alternative scenario, what we see in front of us is probably the best written rationale that we have. And let's put it out to the community for testing. And if we're proven wrong, it wouldn't be the first time in ICANN's history that recommendations are changed after the initial report. Diane.
Hi, Thomas. Just to follow up on what you're saying and to put it maybe in a synthesized and simpler framework, it's the fact that this, even though certain purposes are laid out where it could be seen that, in fact, ICANN is perhaps a sole controller, as you laid out under GDPR, under the definitions you laid out, that's not possible because, in fact, you have to look at the time that the information was taken in, and in fact, the registries and the registrars are collecting that information, transferring that information. Those are all processing activities by definition. So then as you go on to explain within the memo that the joint controllership relationship changes the dynamic, and even if the purpose for which ICANN is using the information is solely by ICANN, it's still within a joint controller confinement because the data was processed along the way by both parties. And the and basically then the processing activities, the processor, if it's, let's say, is no longer just going under the direction of what the controller is saying, but is jointly involved in effectuating what happens with the data. And that's what's happening in the construct of what you just explained in relation to who is and the framework in which it now exists and sits and is collected, transferred, moved, and then ultimately processed by ICANN. So that's just, that's why we've come to this factual determination based upon the processing activities that it is factually a joint controllership relationship.
Thanks very much, Diane. Much appreciated. And I also saw Amr's suggestion in the chat that we might want to have a webinar to explain those things. And I think that's an excellent idea. We've done that a couple of times during the CCWG accountability, and I think that the CCWG has also done that. If we had the time and the budget, I think it would also be helpful to engage Explain, for example, the guys that do these excellent visualizations and illustrations of complex processes to explain to the community what we're doing here. Okay, so I don't know exactly how much time Kurt has allocated to this very topic, but what I would really like to do is present to this group the tentative allocation of responsibilities for the individual purposes and do a sanity check whether there's something that jumps to mind that for the participants that begs alteration of the language of the interim report. And once we've done that, I think we should try to take stock, move forward, and confirm the results of our meeting today and tomorrow's call. Benedict? Benedict wanted
to... Hi, sorry, I had to reconnect. Yeah, exactly. How do you envisage those going into this joint control agreement, please?
Well, resellers are slightly neglected in ICANN's world. So I think the contracted party should primarily speak to that, but my view on this is that the resellers would be processors on behalf of the joint controllers, and we would authorize the registrars to find processors, i.e. to contract with resellers, and they would need to take responsibility for the choice and operations of their resellers. Right? We have a couple of points that need to be reflected for escrow and Ibero. Those would be processors as well as dispute resolution providers. Those would be processors. And instead of forcing the joint controllers to jointly identify adequate processors as contractors, you can have stipulations in the joint controller agreement at the operational level, which I think we should shouldn't really touch, that authorizes ICANN to contract with and to identify and contract with bureaus and escrows and dispute resolution providers, and the same would go for registrars that would get the flexibility to contract with resellers. It would enable registries and registrars to outsource their technical operations, right? So that we would leave all those operational aspects more or less untouched, but we would just embed them in a compliant GTLD world, if you wish. Kurt, you've raised your hand. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so I don't have anything substantive. I just wanted to mention that we do want to take a short break and then get into the next topics, but I don't want to leave this conversation short. So for the rest of the information you want to present, if you could kind of scroll through the document and point to what you want people to read and consider, then I'll try to tie this up and give everybody the appropriate homework assignments.
Okay, so we can make this very short. Maybe folks can just I will not read this to the entire group, but please do read through the allocation of responsibilities in the for the various purposes. I think it's a 2-minute read for you, and it will likely be quick because most of the points will be uncontroversial. And then after the break, maybe we can take 5 minutes to solicit initial feedback, whether I got something plain wrong in the allocation of responsibilities, and shouldn't there be any objections today, then let's give people 24 hours until our call tomorrow, and absent objections, we would then confirm consensus, if any, on the allocation. Right? And again, if you go through that, the responsible party is not the party that actually does the things necessary, but it's the party that we want to be tagged as the responsible party for certain processing activities and for the delivering on certain processing purposes. And that will likely be mirrored in the indemnification, so that the parties that are responsible will then be required to indemnify the other parties for the legality of that data processing. Again, if it comes to being sanctioned by the authorities would be looking at the wrongdoer in the first place, so this is more the overarching concept of who wants what and who's responsible for what. So read that. And then my last word, or last 2 sentences before we break for our short pause, I guess I would tend to recommend to our group not to come up with alternative suggestions to the community. If we tell the community it can be this or it can be that, I think it will be more challenging for the community to appropriately comment on that. I think we should be brave and say, we think it's this. Do you agree with us? We can add a sentence that we've been toying with other scenarios and describe those, but I think we should settle on one solution, put that out for public comment, and only revise if needed, if legal analysis carried out by whoever or public comment suggests for us to readjust the report. Kurt, that's my 5 cents. Back over to you. Thank you for your patience with me. I took, I guess, longer than you expected.
No, it was a refreshing conversation. I just want to make sure we're going to take up a different topic on the other side of the break. I don't want to give people homework during the break. So with that in mind, my comments to this would be to Thomas and us all in reading through this. I think in the introductory materials, We want to make the factual analysis that was performed a little more clear, and that so my reading of it is the legal bases for making these determinations and then the conclusions. But I really liked Thomas and others' discussion in the chat about you know, the sorts of analysis that went to, you know, if one party is missing from this deal, then the whole thing falls apart, and other indicia of joint controllership that Thomas alluded to. So I think I'd want that there. So somewhere we should indicate whether we're seeking any verification of our analysis. So do we intend to consult with any authorities on the conclusions, the temporary conclusions presented here? So think about whether we're going to consult with any DPAs or the Data Protection Board on this issue. And then, you know, I would, if everybody thinks it's a good idea, say, you know, we want to put on, perhaps jointly with ICANN, a webinar on this issue during the comment period or something like that. And so then, you know, maybe headings, you know, that include factual analysis and then, you know, our policy conclusion that, you know, the parties should enter into the, you know, GDPR appropriate agreements with the sort of language that Christina said. So I think that's where we're going on this. And I think that unless you have any closing comments, Thomas, to my comments, or whether you want to point to any specific information in the purposes themselves as an example to read, we'll close this off. So, Thomas, I'm just waiting for a nod or a comment from you.
Yeah, I think, just Kurt, we should probably settle on the set of language for the recommendation. You know, I had suggested we go for one option, namely the proposal of a joint controller situation. You now made reference to Christina's language. I'm not sure whether I'm the only one in the team who's now confused as to what the solution should be. And I think we, you know, if we want to really close this topic tomorrow, I think we need to give team members the opportunity to think about a concrete solution. And my recommendation would be, after everything that we've discussed today, let's assume that the language as proposed stands, and maybe Christina and Mark and others, Margie, who thought that there should be alternative language, then chime in so that we can, on the mailing list, that is, to then determine tomorrow whether we have consensus, rough consensus, or divergence on this matter. But maybe the solution that's now on the table would be the solution as in the top, because I want to get my way, but I think we just need to give clarity to the group as to what our interim result for today is.
Okay, thanks very much, Thomas. And I note in the chat that Christina is going to discuss this with her team. So let's start with your language, and we won't take any Christina or the other intervention with that, but to come back in 24 hours with recommendations. Mark?
Thanks, Kurt. This is Mark Anderson. You know, I guess I'll just, you know, do what Christina and Alan are saying. You know, we're happy to, you know, take this back and comment. You know, this is a complicated issue, and you know, I thank Thomas for his work in that. We'll take it back, provide comments. You know, I want to say, you know, I think I would be foolish to disregard the work and advice of Thomas. And certainly I'm not suggesting that. I do find some of the arguments and rationale a little confusing. I'm not sure I agree with everything Thomas is putting. One of the things that bothers me is I think some of the arguments Thomas makes would also if they were true, would also mean that back-end registry providers are also joint controllers. And I think that's a case where, you know, a back-end registry is clearly a processor. And so I think, it may be just my lack of understanding, This is not as clear. It's not a clear item. It's not. It's a very complicated relationship. The ICANN ecosystem is not clear and does not easily map to any one scenario. So I do think we need to proceed with caution and make sure we're not backing ourselves into a corner here. I do value what Thomas said, the work he's done here, and I appreciate that, and I'm happy to take it back. I just want to go on record. I do have some concerns with the language that is here, and we'll provide feedback.
Well put, Mark. Let's start exactly at 5 minutes to the hour. So I'm going to get a bowl of cereal. Some of you might get lunch, something else. So if we could clear our heads and come back a few minutes before, 5 minutes before the hour, so we're ready to start right then, that would be terrific. When we come back, we're going to look at the matrix of issues that have been raised in comments to the initial report. So we're going to start with that then. So thanks very much for hanging in there, and I'll talk to you shortly.
Hi, everyone. Are we ready to go?
And all recordings have resumed.
Hey, well, it's just a few of us. It's Benedict here, breaching protocol completely to say I've got to drop off because I've got a transnational organized crime case to plan for in a couple of weeks, which I think many people may be involved with, out with this call. So thanks very much. And if anybody would like to chat Legal Natural and my proposal with me, email would be wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan. So in this part of the meeting, what we've done is capture, the support team has captured comments made to the initial report. There's several categories of comments, and so they've been categorized here. There's one set that's straightforward that, you know, if you take them at the simplest level that are the most straightforward, such as punctuation and grammatical changes and very simplistic changes that do not affect the substance or the meaning of the report. And so those comments have been already adopted and included into the latest version of the initial report that you can read. But if there was uncertainty, even uncertainty as to whether the substance was changed, those comments have been included here for discussion. Many of them, I hope we can wrap up quickly. Others raise somewhat complex issues, so I hope we can have succinct discussions about them and identify a path for going forward on the initial report. I think the best way to run this discussion is to have the suggester explain the change that's asked. Some of these first ones are new issues, so maybe among the most complex. And so they might take a little more time, but they might be a little more complex to describe. So I would ask the proposer, and we just have the proposer here by stakeholder group, but I'm hoping that someone from the stakeholder group listed in the table can describe the change, and through that description we'll kind of get an indication of where the discussion should go from there, and I'll do the best to facilitate that. So before we start, Mark, do you have a question?
I don't know if it's a question or comment, but yeah, this is Mark Anderson for the transcript. And Kurt, let me just sort of like raise the elephant in the room and ask, is it still our intention to publish the initial report on 19 November? I guess I'll let me just ask that question to start with.
So the answer is yes. I recognize the challenge, and I want to gauge the difficulty of what lies before us by going through this process. So by embarking on this, that'll provide a great deal of certainty for us, I think.
Okay. Thank you. And then just to follow up, I guess, I appreciate that, but I just want to point out, we're talking about, substantive edits and decisions and discussion still to be had with a very, very short time between now and the 19th, which, includes a weekend. I'm very concerned, and I want us to be very clear on what the process will be for the working group to agree on what does and does not get included in this report. What rigor will be involved? What are the processes, procedures? I guess I'm asking, what's the working group methodology to take the remaining items we're going to discuss between now and the 19th and decide how they do or do not get included in that initial report? So I guess that's my question there, Kurt.
Yeah, this discussion could it could take some time. You know, my thought is that where there is agreement on a topic, there will be, you know, I guess we're not supposed to use the consensus word, I'm not sure, but there'll be agreement on the policy recommendation that is written there. Where there's not agreement, I think each group to a great extent, if not a complete extent, holds the pen on what that group's comment to a particular comment might be. And when I say maybe not, I just have to be or have an attempt at being succinct. And so, you know, there may be negotiations between support staff and each group about tailoring their comment to the major points that need to be made so that the report doesn't become big. I understand that's not a complete answer to your question, and I'm somewhat, I share the same uncertainties you do, obviously. So we're both on the same side here, but I know of no other path but to embark on this and discuss these issues. I was hopeful that there wouldn't be this many topics raised for the initial report, but here they are. And so we can't let them be undiscussed.
Thanks, Kurt. I just want to note, you know, I'm noting in chat, like Ashley just got in, and I'm hearing from my registry colleagues, Christina and Alan, either got dropped from the call or are having to reconnect. So I fear some working group members may have missed the start of the call, so I'll just point that out as a point of order, I guess.
Thanks, Mark. So the first proposed change here. So let's dive in and see where we are. So the first proposed change here is raised by the registrar stakeholder group, and without me reading this, I wonder if someone from the registrar group can describe the recommended change here or the elaboration about further discussion required. Thanks, Matt.
Hey, Kurt, it's Matt. Thanks. So I think I'll just speak to general terms about our comments in this chart. I think the comments were observations and questions that we had in reviewing the initial report. I'm not entirely sure, to be honest. We didn't discuss it in the light of whether or not these were issues that we felt needed to be changed in the initial report before it would be published. So I think we will need to, as a group, the registrar group, that is, have a discussion amongst ourselves as to whether or not the comments that we made need to be addressed. Again, cognizant of the tight timeline that we're working on, I wouldn't be able to speak to right now whether or not we'd be comfortable with the report being published without these comments being addressed, or these might frankly be comments that the stakeholder group would submit as part of our public comments. So I don't know if that makes this exercise any simpler. My goal is that it would.
Yeah, so I'm reading the with having a requirement. So your comment is that this language, you want to have a conversation among your group. This language might be okay for the initial report, but you need to confirm that. Is that what you just said?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think the best thing for us is. I don't, on this specific comment, and it wasn't one, frankly, that I think I personally made. So I don't know that I can speak to it, but just in looking at all of them in totality, I think our comments need to be, again, given the time frame we're dealing with, I don't know if going through each of these comments as a group to try to move forward to get a report published in a week is the best use of our time. It might, again, be something that we just include in our submitted public comments.
Okay, thank you. Let's go on to the next comment.
Kurt, it's Christina Rosette. Can I raise a point of order?
I saw your hand. I registered in my mind, and then, it's my mind. So go ahead, please.
All right, thanks. Christina Rosette for the transcript. I just wanted to flag kind of a broader issue and a more specific one. I had put in, on behalf of the registries, a request last Friday that the staff map the meeting in which a particular recommendation was agreed upon, because we were having difficulty kind of tracking what was in the report versus our notes. And the response was that there it was a significant amount of work, and why did we want it? And I think current recommendation 7 kind of highlights why we want it. This is a recommendation with regard to, I believe, transfer of data to eBurrows and the emergency registrar, and I apologize, I'm forgetting what that's called off the top of my head. But I had indicated in comments I had put in yesterday that that was not a recommendation the registries at this point were comfortable agreeing to go in the report, because there's been no plenary discussion of it. And so the effort I had to go through to figure out where it came from, I think really highlights why I do think it's important that there be a mapping of the recommendation. So in meeting number 22, when Mark presented the data worksheet, he did note that in LA, the discussion group had noted that the jurisdiction could have some implications. There was an action item taken from staff to put together a recommendation, which would have been fine, except the recommendation takes a step beyond what was discussed and then was put out onto the list with, I think, the apparent intention that the only discussion was going to be on the list. And and so kind of doing all this in terms of mapping what the meeting was and then going through all the intermediary email and then finding it and trying to figure out how we got, you know, 2 + 2 = 5, that took like an hour. And so I think it's going to be really helpful if we have a broader decision as a group as to what approach we're going to take about recommendations for which there was no specific discussion. And I would like to repeat my request that staff map the recommendations to the specific meeting. And again, to be clear, I think the issue is that what is in our notes and our recollections doesn't match the words. And so to the extent that, for example, text was added, I think that's helpful to note. Thanks.
So what's the happy medium here? If there's specific recommendations where you want that, is it possible to, like, and maybe you've already done this, list the specific recommendations where you want the link to the meeting back, so it's not done across the board?
I feel strongly, Kurt, that it be done across the board. There's enough where, you know, among the three of us, we're not able to pinpoint
kind of the source of the recommendation, that I think we would feel more comfortable having that information. You know, to be clear, it's something that we feel strongly enough about that someone or some groups of someone's from the registries are going to do it during the public comment period, you know, but it's not an efficient use of our time. And quite frankly, the fact that we're even raising it as an issue, I think is troubling more broadly. Thanks.
Right. And I agree that I'd rather you not be spending your time on this. But in the interest of identifying, you know, getting you the information you need in order to go through your thought process, is there a way to highlight which recommendations where you want the information, so we could prioritize that and do that first?
At this point, Kurt, I'm not in a position to do that. It really is all of them. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Oh, Marika has her hand up. Go ahead, Marika. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kurt. This is Marika. So this comment actually comes up in item O on the list, and we already provided kind of a breakdown of where the different recommendations are derived from, because in many cases they're not necessarily, you know, one meeting that resulted in that recommendation. You know, the majority of the recommendations are kind of direct derivatives of the data element workbooks, which of course took place over a broad range of meetings. So it would be very difficult to pin those down. There are a number of recommendations that specifically relate to the small team efforts, and those again have been specifically marked as well on the wiki page, the calls that took place in that regard. And then, of course, there were plenary conversations in relation to that. I think there was one that came out of a small group discussion in LA. And then there are a number that we kind of, you know, through the different discussions, and Christina just referred to recommendation number 7 as one that was, you know, and that we, I think, already provided actually in the report itself, the reference to the meeting from where that recommendation derived as a specific action item for staff. As that, you know, that was put in as proposed language, you know, staff thought it captured the conversation. And I think the whole point of, you know, going through this list now is to indeed address any issues there are with those recommendations so that those can be addressed and fixed accordingly. Of course, we're happy to start compiling a list and trying to track each recommendation to specific meetings. But as I said, it would be much more helpful to understand, you know, what the concerns are with the recommendations, and then, you know, it's possible then to track back to, you know, where that came from and why it ended up where it ended up, instead of, you know, trying to capture everything. Because as I said, you know, many of the recommendations are derived from the work on the data element workbooks, which I think we started discussing basically from LA until now.
So I would recommend embarking on Christina's request and creating that sort of map. I don't know the best way to do that, but I also understand it might take some time. But while we go through this list and get to specific questions, and so pinpoint the need for additional information and additional references, we can jump on that. But I think in order to understand how easy or hard it is, we should start on that cross-reference document now. Mark?
Thanks, Kurt. Mark Anderson. I echo Christina's concern, and you know, I want to take it a little bit further. I'm not sure. On recommendation number 7 specifically, you know, I do remember bringing it up and talking about it, but I don't recall at any point the working group, you know, agreeing that this should be a recommendation. And you know, I guess you know, I guess I'd happy to be corrected if anybody on the call would like to say, you know, yes, we discussed this and we agreed to this recommendation. I don't feel like we, you know, we as a working group agreed to this as an EPDP consensus policy recommendation language, which is what this is. And going back to this specific instance, you know, my recollection actually was that this would be something that we would follow up on. I forget who, but I thought somebody on the call pointed out that ICANN, you know, does have a procedure for determining who gets assigned to both, I think the conversation talked about the registrar in the event of registrar failure, how a registrar is picked in the event of registrar failure and a new registrar is identified. And that there may be procedures that are already in place to take into account the different geography. But I guess my recollection is that this was not a settled issue, that we had not as a group agreed to consensus policy language, making a recommendation here. You know, if I'm wrong, if I'm forgetting something, or if somebody else wants to correct me and say, no, yeah, Mark, we agreed to this, I'd be happy to be corrected here.
Well, I think that this table does a pretty good job of that. That says this isn't a consensus recommendation, and there hasn't been plenary discussion, and so it was raised by you or someone in your group in the comments, and I think it's fair game to discuss it here. And if we decide, you know, to leave this on the cutting room floor, that's fine. And if we decide that there's a way home from here where we can close this issue off, I think that's good too. And I think that's the spirit of this document, was to, in the initial report, capture the discussion and then provide this review and make those decisions like that. So, and we can decide as we come to these issues, yeah, this is worth talking about because we think we can finish off the discussion here. And if not, then leave it. But, you know, I think this is a necessary part of the process to put up in a draft report the discussions that we'll have, so it can be decided whether to include that or not. So I hope that didn't come across as defensive. Margie?
Yes, this is Margie. I agree with Mark and Christina. Some of these recommendations, when I read them in the report, it seemed like they came out of nowhere. And not to say that in the end we wouldn't agree with some recommendation on the topic, but it felt like we didn't have enough discussion about it to even include it as a recommendation in the report. And I feel like if we're going to try to meet the November 19th deadline, then I guess the report needs to, you know, not just leap into areas that we haven't had adequate discussion on, and note that, you know, there's discussion to be had in the future on this, rather than jump, you know, to some sort of recommendation without having thought it through. So I agree with them. I probably have different recommendations where I have the same reaction, but the concept that as they've raised, as it being, you know, new for the first time, if it's new and we're talking about it now today as the first time we talked about it, then in my view, it's way too premature to throw it into a recommendation category.
Okay, thanks. You know, so I'm very sympathetic to that, and I don't know of any other way to, like, hack through that, right, other than to go through these the comments that are listed in this matrix. And the conversations might be short or longer. I think to a little bit it's a byproduct of trying to answer 53 questions in a few weeks and capturing the conversation and putting that, you know, translating what was heard into this document, which we're reviewing now. So I'm on the same side as everybody. Marika, is that a new hand?
Thanks, Kurt. This is Marika. I just wanted to note, and I put in the chat as well, it would be really helpful if people can be specific, because we're hearing now very general, you know, reference to recommendations. But as you said, the only way to discuss this is to have those items on a list so the group can talk through it, decide indeed whether it belongs there. If it doesn't, you know, take it out. It can either be noted as, you know, an item to be further discussed, or that was discussion started but the group hasn't completed on it yet, or just completely taken out. But again, I think we're really trying to find a way of just working through the items and issues that you know, people have identified in a systematic way, so we can all be on the same page on what the path forward is. And now I do recognize that, of course, there's a lot of things that are coming at everyone, but I think, you know, the only way in which, you know, to do this is actually just, as you said, just start with this, see where we end. Hopefully people by the end of today can flag any other issues that are not on the list yet that they want to discuss, so that we can add those to the list for the discussion that we have and that we've already lined up tomorrow. And then we may need to see how far we get and maybe add additional time Monday morning that allows for the finalization of some of these issues if we're still committed on trying to make the timeline.
So let's take as an example the next one on the list and see if we can get anywhere or not. So the next one on the list has to do with the outcome of a small, very small group discussion that occurred when we were talking about the identification of data controllers and processors and the possible identification of joint controllers and the possible inclusion of third parties as controllers or processors. And at that time, it was there were concerns about this issue about no third-party beneficiary clauses in being raised in existing ICANN contracts. So Margie, can you just so this is a good segue for you, Margie, to take your general issue, which I accept, and make it more specific.
And this is an example of one.
Yep.
I don't even remember talking about this. And in line with what we were talking about earlier this morning with Thomas's language, I think we just leave. This is one of those clauses that, you know, they're very specific to an agreement, and leave it to, you know, that whatever negotiations come out of that, what do we call it, not joint controller, but appropriate GDPR-related agreement, rather than include it as a recommendation. I don't even remember talking about this one.
Kurt, you may be on mute.
Thanks, Marika. Does anybody have any objection to taking this out of the initial report? I think it's as part of a conversation about this, I think it was a vestige of our approach to issues before Thomas's work in a lot of areas. Go ahead, Mark.
Thanks, Kurt. You know, I guess, I remember discussing this one in my initial review of the draft, and I thought it was oddly worded, but so I guess I didn't love the way the language was worded, but I think the language there does serve a purpose. You know, it was in the temporary specification. I think it does serve some useful purposes for in the contract. So, I guess I guess without doing some further analysis, I'm not okay with just removing that language. But I do recall from my analysis that I thought it was poorly worded. So maybe I would view this one as an item that we maybe need to revisit and see if we can clean up the language. I do think there are some legal ramifications. So we can maybe take a look at this one, but. Not okay with just removing it wholesale.
Margie, would you be interested to see how Mark might reword it?
No. I there's a lot of issues with this. So this is one of those areas where if we're going to have a recommendation on it, we need to have a fulsome discussion. And I don't believe that it's appropriate to have third-party beneficiary restrictions in consensus policies. So, I think that's a problem. But again, there's no point in debating it right now. I think it's one of those items we talk about later.
Right. So, all right. So I'm just processing. I hate to get to a position where we say, okay, we'll capture this as a point for later discussion in the report and highlight the issue. But we can either ask staff to come up with wording around that for your review, and I think that's the best way to go about it for this issue. So I'm looking at the next issue that's raised here about that not a recommendation, but a comment that the EPDP team also took note of the fact that, sorry, I'm losing my voice a little bit, that it, you can read it here. Christina, were you going to address the previous topic or this upcoming one? That was made by the
LRSP. I can do both. I actually raised my hand about the previous one, but I can also cover this one since this is my comment. On the previous point, I think we do need to make a distinction between recommendations that were discussed in small groups versus recommendations that haven't been discussed at all. And I think, there is merit where the recommendation was discussed within a small group, but perhaps not in plenary, to kind of keeping it in some way, but also noting the actual status of it, which is a long way of saying that I would not support it if it is in fact the case that this recommendation 18 was discussed in a small group. Then I do think it needs to somehow stay in the report, although, again, not necessarily as a recommendation. I'm open to how we phrase that, but I do think it would need to stay in, subject of if folks have specific wording changes, then that's a different issue. But I do think that's different from, for example, Recommendation 7, which we just haven't really discussed in its current form at all. To go to the point that I'd made about item number C in the chart, I just didn't recall that we took note of that and that the RPM's PDP working group was expected to factor in any changes resulting from GDPR requirements. So I was the one who was asking whether or not that was the case. And I think the staff has confirmed that they are expected to do that. And I guess what I'm not sure of is staff asking us whether we want to provide specific guidance or not. I'm not clear on what the return action item might be there. Thanks.
Thanks, Christina, for both those comments. Marika, do you have an answer?
Thanks, Kurt. This is Marika. So, yeah, we checked in with our colleagues that are supporting the RPM working group, and although in many respects, they're still in near the preliminary stages of some of the conversations, and they haven't, of course, started yet on the UDRP review. They did confirm that it is one of the considerations that the group is expected to factor in. However, the suggestion that we made here is that if there are specific items. And again, I don't think that's something that you'll need to do for the initial report, but if there are specific considerations that this group had or certain, you know, revelations, and in going through the detailed data processing activities, it may be helpful to share that with the RPM group to help inform their conversations instead of them having to kind of, you know, get there themselves. So that was the only suggestion I think that staff was making here. But as I said, I don't think that's anything that, you know, needs to be specifically called out in an initial report. It may just something you want to think about. And that could be as well, you know, in the form of a conversation with that working group at some stage, just so they can learn from, you know, the work that this group has done and how that may inform their continued work on the review of the URS and the UDRP.
Hi, sorry everybody, my microphone got disconnected. Thanks for that answer, and I'm reading that that's a good answer. So thanks very much. I'm having a bit of trouble reading the next one from the IPC. Okay, so this comment's from the IPC that proposed this rewording. Can you, somebody from IP, go through this? And I'm not looking at the hand-raising thing. Hang on.
Yeah, Kurt, this is Marika. If I can just very briefly, and I don't want to speak to this, but just to note that, you know, this was added after we made our first round of changes, and at least, you know, although this to us looks like more of a reorganization and not necessarily a substantive change, you know, we didn't feel comfortable by just kind of putting that in as we kind of did already the first fix of items. So that's why it actually got added here, but Diane may be able to speak further to this.
Oh, thanks, Diane.
Sure. It's very much just a clarity change. It's not changing the intent or the meaning at all of the proposed language. It's just simply clarifying, making clear to the reader on how to line it out. So anyone that has any issue with it, please let me know. But I think that it clearly just supports the same exact concept and intent.
You may be on mute again.
Yes, I was. I was asking Diane if she could continue on because the comment below was of the same vein.
Okay, well, the comment below was simply about the footnote, as far as I understand it. And the request was to take that footnote out because the footnote basically, it seems that it wasn't fully vetted and discussed and provides legal advice. And so much to what we've been discussing, to be adding a footnote that says that we discussed whether there's an implication on whether it's sufficient for the registered name holder to inform the individual, et cetera, et cetera. It ends up providing legal advice and furthermore, it really simply just it's something that wasn't fully discussed within the group. So I think much to what we've been saying here today, we shouldn't include things that weren't fully vetted.
Alan, go ahead, please.
Thank you. I'm just going to go back to D very quickly there, and my apologies, but if I can audit and everything, this is actually the first time I read this, and I actually must disagree with Dan. I think that the point that was in the original wording is completely missed in the second wording, and that is that in the original wording, the point is that we, the contracted parties and the NCSG have expressed the view that we should not be obliged to ask for, to provide the option, whereas your wording is saying that we should still be obliged, but it's just optional for them to give it or not. And I think that was the fundamental misunderstanding and discussion that we had in this, that registrars should not be obliged to provide it in the contract. But, and I do think, and please people correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm reading that as not being the case in this proposed rewording. So if that is the case, I would not be accepting of that, I'm afraid.
Alan Greenberg, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much. On the issue of informed consent, of informing versus getting permission, the word inform, if I remember correctly, came out of a Data Protection Board letter that said if people are going to include an individual's name in a field that is published, they should be informed. So I thought that's where the word came out of and didn't need re-verification again with the Data Protection Board.
Okay, Diane, I assume that's a former hand?
Yes. You know, when it comes down to this revision, it's not, if there's any concern that in fact the intent has changed, then we won't make the revision. The revision was not intended to change the meaning of this at all. So certainly, we could certainly stick with the original language. That's not an issue.
All right. I think at this point, that would be great and is the best approach. Ashley?
Yes, sorry to throw a wrench into this, but actually the way it was revised by the IPC actually was in keeping, at least with my understanding of how things were left in LA, which was that it would basically stick to what the current requirements are, which is that the contracted parties are required or obliged to ask if they want to provide it. It was only optional for the registrants as to whether or not they provide it. So they don't have to provide a technical or admin, or rather a technical contact, but they should have the opportunity to provide so if they wish.
Thanks, Ashley. Marika, could you make some comments? You know, I need to apologize to the group. I got distracted in the last 2 minutes, and the distraction only lasted 30 seconds, but I missed an important part of this. So, Marika, could you comment to this and tell us where you think we are?
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. I think part of the challenge is here that actually, indeed, that there was an original approach preliminary agreed or discussed in the LA meeting, but we had subsequent conversations, and I don't remember exactly which meeting, on this concept. And I think in the end, it was clear that there's actually an agreement within the group, what the optional means. I think everyone agrees that it's optional for the registered name holder to provide, but there's no agreement on whether it's also optional for the registrar to request this information. And I think as such, that has been captured in the report, and that is then linked to indeed this the clarifying question in relation to, you know, what is exactly meant with informing a third party that their data is being used. Does that mean that it's fully the responsibility of the registered name holder to do so, and there's no liability involved for the registrar in relation to getting any kind of consent or agreement from that third party? So I think that where the group left that was indeed to get clarification or hopefully get some clarification on this issue so the group could then discuss further this concept of optional, as well as what the impact is of having data being provided by a party with which the registrar doesn't have a direct contractual relationship. And I think that is what the language was aiming to reflect. Kurt, you may be on mute.
Thanks, Marika. Diane or Alan Greenberg, are you either or both in the queue? Diane first and then Alan.
Thanks, Kurt. I appreciate the differential here. And as Ashley has stated, the point of the rewrite was to try to bring this home for us. There is still that outstanding issue, though, that I understand, and that distinction. So we do stand behind our position. If, in fact, the rewrite causes there to be discrepancies between what was agreed on and what wasn't, then we can certainly, consider that further in our work.
Thanks, Diane. Alan?
Yeah, thank you. I think the issue of the rewrite brings to a head the fact that there was no formal agreement with everyone agreeing. One of the issues that was never addressed was for a registrar that chooses to no longer have an option to collect the data, what happens for the data in their existing records where that data is there? Do they just delete it? And that's an issue of registrant rights. So I don't think we can ignore that if we decide that a registrar has the option of no longer collecting. Thank you.
Right. And I think it's important that we this comment is just intended to reflect the difference that exists now and reflect it clearly. So if we think that the old comment captures that difference clearly, then I think that's what we should stick with. So thanks very much for that discussion. The IPC comment that follows that you touched briefly on is actually more substantive rather than clarity. So we think this accurately captures the extent of the the position. But Diane, can I put you back on the spot with this? It's under the letter E and your question about whether that's accurate and whether we left the question open to only getting board input or did we propose getting legal input additionally?
It says that in a footnote that if contact details for persons other than the name holder are provided, it should be ensured that the individual concerned is informed. EPDT discussed whether this note implies that it's sufficient to inform it has designated as a technical contact or whether there may be additional legal obligations. The only thing that I'm concerned with is we had discussed on whether we've then gone on to have further discussions about this point in relation to the language that Benedict has suggested and in other forms. And so I'm just wondering if, in fact, we really left this open for board input or whether we are getting legal input on our front, whether ICANN.org was ever supposed to be weighing in on this, whether we're going to actually get guidance, provide educational guidance in the form of additional language. So I thought that this was something that was not clear. If, in fact, there's consensus that this provides enough guidance to the readers, then that's fine, but I thought that it was important to have the discussion on whether this, in fact, provides clarity or whether it should just be temporarily removed until we have more time to revisit the issues that are concerning the additional legal obligations.
And when you say board input, do you mean data protection board input?
Yeah, that's what the footnote says.
Okay.
I mean, certainly we were always also looking for ICANN legal input.
Marika, do you have a comeback to this question?
This is Marika. My recollection is that on that call, I was only discussed to, you know, get clarification from the EDPB on this point. But of course, the group can decide to undertake additional action. Is that, I think the question is that something that needs to be spelled out in the initial report, or is that something that, you know, the group can just continue discussing and seeing what else, you know, may be needed in relation to addressing this issue once, you know, feedback is received.
So I think Diane, you know, it's kind of hard to answer this question unless you're proposing something additional.
I wasn't proposing something additionally. I was
right.
Proposing that,
right.
In fact, it be removed until the, is it confusing to the reader?
I see.
Is it presenting an issue that hasn't been properly vetted? And in all reality, you're looking for data protection board input, but we don't even have that as a solidified course of action to be able to say that we're definitely going to get it. So we're sort of providing somewhat of a false, unsubstantiated input there. So I think it's better to provide full information, or at least just not include the footnote at this time. But, you know, certainly if people think there's value in it, that's fine, too.
Alan.
Sorry, it feels like I'm just going back and Diane on these points, and I apologize. Just as you're explaining there, Diane, and as I'm reading through it as well, I mean, I think what you're pointing out is that there is a lot of complexity in this issue, and perhaps this goes back to something that Christina was saying earlier about whether or not we should be putting in these elements of where an agreement has not been reached. And I think as a footnote, it shows that, look, this isn't just a black and white issue. This is a very, one of those exceptionally difficult issues, which again, we need to discuss and hash out more. And I think it might, you know, to the casual reader, give them a better understanding that we have to put a lot of thought into an awful lot of micro issues in this. So, I mean, I'm not necessarily against taking it out, but I do see the merit of keeping in the sort of difficulty that we as a team have faced. And not to put it mildly, you know, we've had some tough discussions on this, and perhaps it should be reflected.
You know what, Alan, I think that I always appreciate your viewpoint, and I think that's a good one. I mean, I think that is my point, based upon what Christina said and what you're saying, is that there are certain issues, just as this one, that have great legal complexity. We're not supposed to be giving legal advice, as we've all repeated to say, but if, in fact, there's a consensus that leaving it in as a footnote presented as an issue that needs to be addressed and has to be addressed eventually, and that we are setting it up to be addressed, then I see value in that, and I agree with you.
So do we want to – I don't think we need to point out to the reader that this is an issue of greater complexity, of great complexity, although the reason I'm saying this is I feel this urge to do so to make it perfectly clear. So but what I'm getting to is an agreement that will leave this as is, that it's an important point to make. All right, the last issue I want to discuss during this meeting, and then everyone can take the rest of the day off with pay. Oh, it has to do with recommendation 7. So we've talked about this, and so the recommendation by the RYSG is to delete the recommendation. Because we have not discussed it. So I think the question is, you know, whether we just delete it or refer to an issue that must be discussed about the geography of whether gaining registrars need to, the geography and location of gaining registries or registrars needs to be anticipated. So I think So I have a couple thoughts. One is to leave the first sentence in there as a recommendation, and the second is to take out the whole recommendation. Mark?
Thanks, Kurt. It's Mark. So I'll bite, I guess. I think the concern we raised is that, you know, we've discussed this, but we're not sure that this has risen to the level of a working group consensus policy recommendation. So I think maybe the compromise here would be to reword this not as an EPDP team recommendation, but rather document the issues we discussed. Talk about how, you know, the EPDP team discussed the fact that the geography of a gaining or of the e-bureau provider may be impactful when it comes to privacy regulations and the rights of the data subject, and that there may need to be additional considerations in this area. But I think at this point, I don't think that our discussions have risen to the level of a consensus policy recommendation. So I have no issues with us, you know, capturing what we discussed and having this language in the report. I just don't think that, at this point, I'm comfortable with it being a policy recommendation. So I guess that would be, off the top of my head, what I would suggest as a go forward path between now and Monday when we're planning to send out this report.
Thanks very much for that, Mark. Marika, oh, you have your hand up. I was going to ask you, is this recommendation respond to a specific charter question?
This is Marika. Not as such. I think there is a question in relation to, you know, whether the processing or mapping the processing steps in relation to Ebro, and I think that charter question is addressed. But I think this was an issue that they came up in the conversation on that specific call. I said you know, from a staff side, we have no specific view on whether, you know, this should be a recommendation or should just be described. But I just wanted to note, because it's a comment that actually comes back in later aspects of the table as well, and it's kind of triggered with Mark referring to this as a consensus policy recommendation. But I just want to make clear as well that the group is not limited to making recommendations only that have, you know, contractual requirements associated with them. If you look at the list and you know, the PDP manual, it's very clear on that. So there's a wide variety of types of recommendations that the group can make. And in this specific case, you know, it's a recommendation or advice, basically, that the group, I think, is providing to ICANN. And it's definitely not something that the group is precluded from doing. But as I said, you know, having said that, you know, staff is happy to kind of translate this into you know, reflecting the discussion and noting that the group will further consider whether or not a recommendation is appropriate in this regard. But I just wanted to already line up the other issue because I know it comes back in some of the other comments that were made on some of the other recommendations.
Thanks, Marika. And I'll note that, let me gab for a second here, Alan. So certainly we should adjust the language to say this was an issue that was discussed and, you know, we can seek input on it during the comment period, but that we haven't really explored the issue other than identifying it as an issue. But I was going to ask if any other contracted parties had a point of view on Mark's comment, and so gratefully Alan's raised his hand.
Thank you. I don't know if you're going to think gratefully after I have to say. the reason why this is one of those ones that sticks in my mind as well, because as I read it, I'm like, my gut reaction is, if I had discussed this, I would have had this point of, I don't even know why that would even be a recommendation for us, because it doesn't seem to be completely right anyway. Just purely because if ICANN is choosing an Ibero, it doesn't matter where the Ibero really is, just because, you know, it's going to be subject to the GDPR anyway, because there's more than likely going to be European or EEA data involved with such a transfer. So, I mean, this is something that ICANN would need to consider as a legal obligation as opposed to as because we have recommended it for them. So, I mean, I'm not explaining myself very well here on that, but again, it's just my thought on this one is, if we had that substantive discussion, I don't see how it would have made it into the end, if you know what I mean. So, again, I'm sure you're not thanking me and my input on that one, but that's my gut reaction on that one.
So would you be okay with a sort of comment that Mark made that the issue was raised in discussion, or would you rather see no reference to it?
I mean, again, it's one of those things where I'm like, what would people say if looking at this and understood what we were actually trying to get at here? They were like, well, why was this the recommendation in the first place? I mean, you could have it down as being for discussion. I agree with Mark in that one. I just think that, you know, ultimately it might be one of those ones that we might say bye-bye to. But, it's not a huge point, but, again, it goes to the point of I just don't remember this discussion.
Yeah, so I'm sort of, to the extent of a lot to say this, I'm sort of of the view in all the complexity we're dealing with here that this one we might just leave behind because we have enough for people to think about. You know, certainly this is a this issue is raised in a sort of way in the workbooks where we talk about the transfer or disclosure of data to third parties to fulfill this purpose. But you know, I think it's captured in the workbook in that mind, and we could take this issue off of the initial report. So I'm getting some agreement there. So that's a great note on which to end the meeting. So thanks very much. 3 hours later, we're still civil and talking to one another. I'm going to take the last 30 seconds to reiterate that the support team and of course me take very, very seriously the comments about, you know, how the heck do we get to Monday and what's it going to look like and is that possible? So that's, you know, of the things that keep me up at night, that's certainly among them. And also, I want to make very clear that in trying to get to that date, the support team and I have gone through the discussions and comments and tried to cull out from the discussions agreements or agreements that can be proposed in the initial report for our review. So to the extent that it seems that the support team were driving in some direction in order to get some false sense of closure, that's certainly not the case. And I hope we can continue to work constructively. And, you know, to a certain extent, you find fault with the wording here. That's great. And so, you know, Alan Woods, all your comments are always welcome. So with that, unless anybody has anything, I'll see you on the next call, which is amazingly soon, I think.
Thanks, Kurt.
Terrific. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you all.
Thanks, Kurt. Bye.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day. Operator, if you could please stop all recordings.